Court, Leslie Yip for Petitioner Patrick Trent. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. I'd like to focus my comments today on the conflict issue in light of the Court's order, comment on the Court's recent decision in Houston, which is an exact case. Before I get there, I'd like to just note a few points that we agree on. Counsel here stated in 18 months before trial that she was worried about a conflict because the Public Defender's Office had previously represented Xavier Lozano, who was a critical witness in the state's case. The prosecutor at that point said that Lozano would not be called. 4 days before trial, the prosecutor added Lozano to his witness list and again requested that Lozano testify. The trial court at that time recognized that if Lozano were to testify, it would put counsel in the middle between the obligation to her own client and the obligation to Lozano. And again, counsel stated that. Halfway through trial, the state again requested that Lozano be called, and the trial court changed its ruling and allowed Lozano to testify. Again, defense counsel objected and said that she had a conflict and she would not be able to testify.
Well, question one is, did she have a conflict? It seems like probably she didn't at that point.
As this court has held in Alberni and Lewis, and as well as in Hovey and Rodriguez, the nature of the question about whether a conflict exists is based on adverse effect, whether divided loyalties had an adverse effect.
But I'm asking first. We know that she thought she had a conflict and that she said that this is why she didn't cross-examine him. But I'm trying to step back a minute and say, does it matter to the analysis whether she in fact had any ethical problem had she decided to go ahead and do the cross-examination?
Well, from our perspective, the answer would be no. There is not a need, even if counsel believes that there is a hypothetical. I mean, even if it turns out there's a hypothetical conflict, that counsel honestly believes in that conflict, and then it adversely affects her representation, that is a violation of the Sixth.
But it may be a Strickland violation. I mean, that's the problem, right? I mean, the real question is, what box are we in? I mean, if she really had no conflict and went ahead and didn't do the cross-examination, even though she should have, that would be a Strickland problem. And as I understand it, you're not raising a Strickland issue.
We are not. And let me step back just to explain the nature of the conflict itself, because I do think we didn't do this well enough in our briefing, and I apologize for that. The nature of the conflict itself is that the Public Defender's Office had negotiated a deal for Lozano based on a 1997 robbery. Now, that robbery served as the predicate offense in our client's trial for the street terrorism. Moreover, Lozano was testifying under that agreement when he testified against defendant. And so the deal that was negotiated by her office included that he had to testify truthfully. Now, if she were to cross-examine him vigorously, as she did against another state's witness, Jimenez, who provided the other aspect of gang evidence against our client, it was 100 pages of blistering cross-examination. She refused to do that here because she believed that that would invoke him, Lozano, to break his plea agreement, and then he would be liable for the robbery that he had pled to, as well as other crimes that he had admitted when he had debriefed. So in fact, here there was an actual conflict, but I would submit that even if it was a hypothetical one.
But her office wasn't representing him anymore, was it?
No, they weren't. That is absolutely correct.
And she had never represented him.
It was successive representation, and it was considered imputed representation.
And she had no confidential information that was relevant to this.
She had no confidential information, but I would say that the courts have found that while having confidential information is one way in which conflict can occur, that there are other ways. And in this instance, it was that she believed that she would force a client or a previous client of her office to go against the plea agreement, and then he would be susceptible to criminal liability. But I would also note that the touchstone for the conflict analysis, as they say, is not about the hypothetical nature of the prior representation. It is about whether there was a divided loyalty that led to an adverse impact. Stated it 18 months, 4 days before, and then halfway through
time. So you're arguing for a rule that basically says if the lawyer thinks she has a conflict and acts on that, it doesn't make any difference whether she's totally wrong about that. And that's what's It's an interesting problem, but I don't know what the answer is. Do you have any support for that?
Well, I do have support for that. I would say in Mickens and in Sullivan and then...
But in none of those cases did anybody ever conclude that there really wasn't... I mean, there was a lot of debate about whether it was an actual conflict or a potential conflict, but nobody was suggesting that there really wasn't a conflict in any ordinary code of ethics sense.
Well, many of those cases were both imputed and successive. So to the extent that that, you know, extenuates the potential for conflict, which of course it does if it were joint representation.
Which one was imputed and successive?
Imputed and successive Hovey and also Rodriguez, although that was a direct appeal case, were both. And Houston was, but of course Houston, as I mentioned, is a mixed bag because it introduces the idea that prejudice also need proven, which it's our contention that it need not be proven. And based on Alberni and Hovey and Rodriguez and Lewis, this court has already resolved that so long as there is an adverse impact based on a divided loyalty, that prejudice need not also be proven. And if you think about it from the defendant's perspective, that makes incredible sense, and that's sort of where the conflict analysis and focus comes from. Just because the attorney believes they have an obligation and believes it wholeheartedly and then refuses to cross-examine a critical state's witness, the right to assistance of counsel conflict-free has in fact been violated. And as the court in Mickens noted, it's not an inquiry into the theoretical nature of the conflict itself. It's whether the conflict adversely affected the defendant's representation. And I would point out that Lozano was critical. Lozano, the prosecutor promised not to call Lozano, and repeated again and again, requested again and again, and then the only other evidence on the game issue was submitted by Jimenez, and after the 100-page cross-examination of Jimenez, that's when the prosecutor renewed her request and said, we need Lozano.
How critical was Lozano? I understand he was called solely to corroborate a gang expert with law enforcement.
While he was called to do that as well, that was the why the prosecutor said that he was called. If you look at the evidence, the defendant here, he admitted being present. He said that he was surprised by the attack and walked away. It was the state's theory that the reason that Mr. Trent was involved and was involved was because it was a hit on a dropout from the Northern Structure gang. So that provided critical motive for why he would be involved in this type of altercation instead of what he had said. And so, of course, if in fact this had been an alibi defense or something, Lozano's testimony wouldn't have been important in that sense. But because it was directly related to motive and the only reason that our client, Patrick Trent, would be involved in the altercation and the murder.
Can you want to reserve some time?
I do want to reserve.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court. I'm Catherine Chapman, representing the appellee warriors. In no case cited by Tripp has this court ever granted relief for a Sixth Amendment violation based on a conflict without requiring a showing of prejudice in a case in which representation causing the conflict is both successive and purely imputed. Counsel had no privilege of confidential information about the prior matter. The two cases are unrelated, and they were assessed by the counsel's actions for an explanation rather than the
conflict. Well, it seems to me there are two possible reasons why this case is different. One is, I'm not sure it is unrelated, as she has just described. That is, if he was testifying under the deal that was cut by her office, the cross-examination could affect his deal, I'm not sure how unrelated that is. And secondly, what's really odd about this case is that in most of the cases we have a conflict but no effect. Here we have an effect but maybe no conflict. And the question is, does that matter?
Well, Well, first I would respond that what this court has required in the way of cases being related is a good deal more direct than that. Cases in which, for example, in Houston, there was an altercation between the defendant and the witness that was directly related to the motive in Houston's case. Here what we have is a case in which the public defender had completed its representation of Lozano, obtained his plea agreement for him, and he was at the point where he was still pursuant to that plea agreement, cooperating in these cases, but the public defender no longer had any interest in whether Lozano...
Well, for example, since the public defender had negotiated the deal, if he had some question about how far the deal went and how he should operate under the deal, wouldn't he go back to the public defender and discuss that?
Not to this public defender.
Why not?
This public defender had no knowledge of the details of the deal, no confidential knowledge, I should say. She had.
I understand that, but I understand that. I mean, to the public defender's office, to the person who he had dealt with. In other words, this is an implementation. The imputation is a second problem, but suppose it was the same PD. I mean, it seems to me that she does have a continuing interest that runs to this trial, because this trial is implementing the deal that she negotiated.
That's not the test this court has used. The test this court has used is...
I'm sorry?
...related cases, factually related cases, and privileged information. Now, if privileged information came into play in cross-examining this witness, that would be different, and that might happen if we had the same public defender. But here we don't. We have a public defender who has not the knowledge to say, oh, I know he's not telling the truth, and I know he's going to be in trouble on his deal. She doesn't have that knowledge. She represented to the trial court that the attorney who represented Lozano would not even discuss the case with her. And that is probably why, throughout her presentation, she used language like, I'm not convinced I don't have a conflict, and she's very tentative in asserting the conflict. It also may be why she never goes as far as moving to withdraw. She herself is not convinced she has a conflict.
But she insisted that it was the reason why she didn't do the cross-examination, no?
Well, she discussed two things at the trial court. One, that she did not feel comfortable cross-examining him. Now, maybe, you know, she feels like for an ethical reason she shouldn't be cross-examining him. The Sixth Amendment doesn't protect that.
I don't understand that. I thought exactly what it protects. I mean, the whole line of cases under Kyler and all that has to be premised in respecting attorneys' ethical obligations. Otherwise, we could just tell everybody to go on and ignore their ethical obligations, and there wouldn't be any Sixth Amendment problem.
Mickens says that the purpose of the Sullivan exception, which is what we're talking about, the Sullivan ruling, is not to enforce ethical standards. They say that in Mickens, and I think we have to take them at their word. Whether the attorney has a conflict or not is an objective inquiry. It's not based just on defense counsel's professed concern. That's why...
Well, if you run that in this case, then it seems to me the petitioner wins, because the lawyer thought... The lawyer said that her behavior was because she believed she had a conflict. I was troubled by that because I thought, well, if she's just wrong about that, then it should be a Strickland problem but not a Kyler problem. But you seem to be saying the opposite. You seem to be saying that if she operated on the premise that she had an ethical conflict, it doesn't matter whether she did or didn't, because ethics don't matter. What matters is the actual effect, and that was the actual effect. The effect was that it made her not completely represent her client.
Well, if that's the case, if she had an ethical concern that affected her representation, what I'm saying is we are out of the Sullivan rule and we are into the Strickland.
Why?
Because the Sullivan rule does not apply to protect just ethical concerns. It has to be a case in which counsel is actively representing different conflicting interests. And that's not what we have here. And the second thing I would say about that is that the state court explicitly found that her reason for not cross-examining Lozano was not an assertive conflict. It was concerns over the discovery issue that they spent a great deal of time on.
Where is that?
That is that it's in the excerpts of record, the Court of Appeal opinion, the excerpts of record.
I didn't hear. Where? What page?
17.
Okay.
And that is well supported by the record in light of the fact that she cross-examined a man who had also been represented by the public defender's office in his case. The co-counsel who was not in the public defender's office also did not cross-examine like she did.
Where in the record is the trial court's discussion of why he went ahead and allowed this? Yeah. In other words, I see what the state supreme state court of appeals said. Is that supported by the record in terms of what the reason was why she didn't do the cross-examination?
I believe it is, because there was considerable discussion about the discovery issue with Lozano of preliminary hearing transcripts and the like. And both co-counsel for defendant, who was not of the public defender's office, both of them stated that they were not prepared to cross-examine Lozano for any reason. Acknowledging that Trent's counsel also maintained that she thought she might have a conflict, she also stated she was not prepared to cross-examine the witness. And as I said, she did cross-examine Jimenez, who also had been represented by the public defender. Co-counsel, like Trent's counsel, did not cross-examine.
What she said was, next question, is there going to be a cross-examination of Mr. Lozano, Ms. Hansen? It's my position that I have a conflict. She didn't say I might have a conflict or I could have a conflict. I know the court does not see that there is. Is there going to be a cross-examination of Mr. Lozano? No. So I don't understand how the state Supreme Court could conclude otherwise. State Court of Appeals.
Well, as
Tracy
said, the state court can consider in light of the record what counsel is saying, and does not have to take counsel at his or her word as to whether they do or do not have a conflict. And that is what the state appellate court did in this case, viewing the whole record, the extensive discussions about discovery. That is your conclusion. Now, that's the conclusion of historical fact. Turning to the Houston case, and I see my yellow light is on. I actually have a lot to say about Houston, which is a recent case.
Oh, well, why don't you say it for, say, 2 minutes? Why don't you say it for 2 minutes?
But let me begin by saying I would be happy to submit supplemental briefing on Houston if the court desires, if we can't cover everything. Houston is, first of all, the senior for the attorney in that case went much further in articulating a conflict. He had knowledge of the prior case. The case was directly related to the motive in the instant case. He actually moved to withdraw his counsel. This court found that there was an adequate state court inquiry. In this case, the parties in the court discussed the possibility of a conflict on several occasions. And counsel had every opportunity to articulate a real conflict. Trent has never sought further hearing. Trent must be satisfied with the hearing that he got in the trial court because he has never asked for another hearing on state habeas. Houston had articulated facts evidently supporting prejudice under Strickland because Houston actually is Strickland. Houston recognizes...
Isn't that the ultimate point, that the court, although it didn't exactly say this, treated it as a Strickland point, a case? It appears that it did because it remanded for a prejudice finding.
It was. It was. Now, in this case, Trent has never argued with Strickland that he has suffered prejudice under Strickland. He's hung his hat throughout all of these proceedings on Sullivan and the Sullivan rule and its exception for showing, not having to show prejudice. So that raises a number of problems, the first one being that a Strickland claim is not exhausted in the state court. It's probably Teague barred. And I guess what I would have to say is if this court were to choose to remand in this case, we would ask that it not be remanded specifically for an evidentiary hearing, but for Trent to make a showing that he is entitled to an evidentiary hearing, since he has never done that, at which point we can thrash out these issues of whether he can make an adequate showing, whether there are exhaustion issues, Teague issues, all of these things that have not been addressed so far. Houston is also distinguishable in the application.
Okay, would you wrap up, please, because it's 2 minutes over. Okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd just like to start by saying that it was never, counsel was clear 18 months before trial, 4 days before trial, 3 weeks into trial, that this was the reason she would not cross-examine was a conflict issue.
What do we do with the fact that the State Court of Appeals seemed to say otherwise?
The State Court of Appeal was wrong on that point. They actually found that she would not, the co-counsel had decided not to cross-examine on discovery. Now, maybe they got confused between what she had said about not cross-examining and what she had said, but she had been very clear about
that. Co-counsel meaning the counsel for the co-defendant?
Yes, I'm sorry. Co-counsel meaning the co-defendant. Moreover, they also said that she hadn't explained the idea of the nature of her belief in the conflict, not that she could never show the adverse impact. At no point has the state said that she believed that she had a conflict. Rather, it was that there was not a real conflict. I would point out that this court has resolved this issue in our favor on Hovey, Rodriguez, Burney, and the additional prejudice requirement.
What about the observation that the bottom line in all these cases, though, was the other one, was otherwise? That the bottom line in all those cases was that there was no constitutional violation. Hovey ultimately concluded that there was, in fact, no constitutional violation.
It did, but it remanded for a hearing on adverse impact. Mm-hmm. And we've proven that. And that's to her point of why we've never asked for a Strickland hearing or a prejudice hearing.
That was used to, but I was talking about Hovey. I don't remember Hovey remanding on anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. I may have been thinking of Alberti. I was thinking of Alberti.
Okay.
But not on prejudice. And I would say that because the foundation is the question of whether in that not on theoretical stations of representation, that the fact or joint is not important here.
Thank you very much. Thank you, counsel, for a useful argument and an interesting case. The case of Trent versus Evans is submitted.